Because this is the first Thursday, I'm going to be talking about the basics of meditation in this first half hour, rather than our usual question and answer session. Good. So hopefully that is what you'll be interested in. So essentially, I'm going to just start from the absolute beginning, what I would say to somebody who has expressed an interest in learning to meditate, but doesn't really know very much about it, and hasn't really practiced much. And I think the place to begin is to point out that meditation is a way of training the mind. That's actually the best translation of the word bhavana, which is the Pali word used for meditation, is mental training of the mind. And what you're training the mind specifically in is you're training the mind in attentional stability, which is what people often refer to as concentration, and mindful awareness. These are the two things. First of all, I like to use the word attentional stability because it's a more accurate description, and most especially because it avoids some of the misconceptions that people inevitably associate with the word concentration. Also, some people just naturally have a dislike for the word concentration or an emotional resistance to the word concentration. I will acknowledge that what we're talking about is consistent with what's usually referred to as concentration in the English language. But I'm going to use the terms attentional stability and explain it in a way that I think makes it more clear than just referring to it as concentration. And then I'll move on to the other thing that we're interested in training, which is mindful awareness, which I don't think there is a concept in common use in the English language that even remotely approaches mindful awareness. Good evening. So let's talk about attentional stability. First, make a distinction between attention and awareness. And so you all know what attention is. You pay attention to one thing and then another thing. What you pay attention to dominates your conscious experience in the moment, right? And your mind can move from one object of attention to another object of attention. Or sometimes, while you are attending to one object, something else will suddenly displace that and become a new object of attention. Or you can intentionally move your attention from one thing to another. So attention is whatever object or event or process is dominating your conscious experience in the moment. Now, in your ordinary experience, although you're paying attention to one thing, you are also aware of other things. Make sense? So we have these two ways that we're taking in information, that we are experiencing the world, and that we're also experiencing ourselves, because we might be paying attention to what's happening inside our own mind. We might be attending to a thought. Or we might be attending to something else, and in our awareness, we're aware of emotions, thoughts in the background of our awareness, and so forth. So I'm using the word awareness in a very specific way. You may be used to thinking of awareness and consciousness as being more or less synonymous. But I'm making a really big distinction here. I'm saying that consciousness is this subjective experience we have, this direct experience of knowing, this experiencing a phenomena that we can, not only is it direct, it's highly subjective, it's very defining of our reality in the moment. We have recollection of it, and we can report it to other people. We can make comments about consciousness. Now, when I say awareness, if you think about it, I told you I was using awareness to refer to what's going on in the background. But, of course, that is conscious awareness. You're conscious of what's going on in the background. But the awareness itself is not the same as consciousness. Because, well, one way of approaching it, I would just point out that all kinds of organisms, we could say they are aware, they respond to their environment in various ways. But we find it very doubtful that they would be conscious, at least in the sense that we say that we are conscious, and we assume that human beings are conscious. So these are two different things. And when you bring, as the human mind does, when you bring the element of consciousness to the process of awareness, that creates the context, the background for your experience. And then, over and above that, we're able to further focus the power of consciousness on specific object. And that's our intention. Okay, so we want to develop stability of attention. And then we also want to make our awareness mindful, have the mindful awareness part of it. The sense in which attention is not stable is that common experience we have that the attention is constantly shifting and moving. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes it is moving due to our intention. We intentionally shift the attention from one thing to another, but other times it spontaneously moves or something intrudes in the space of our attention and displaces whatever else is there. So one sense in which we want to develop attentional stability is to be able to focus our attention on one thing intentionally and have it stay there. So that's called directed and sustained attention. And initially, when somebody's beginning to meditate, that is the main thing that they're concerned with, is developing some degree of attentional stability. There are other meditation methods that neglect to address this at all. But it doesn't change the fact that when you sit down to do those methods, you're going to go through a long period of frustrated attempt to practice in the way that's described, because your attention is not stable. And so the approach that I take, is since that's the first thing that you have to have to be able to do any of the other things that you might do as a part of the meditation practice, you begin working on directed and sustained attention, the ability to intentionally choose an object of attention, and have your attention stay with that with a reasonable degree of consistency. So that's the first goal, really, is to achieve that degree of attentional stability. Now, farther along, not right away, but farther along, we work on another aspect of attention, of attentional stability, which is the scope of your attention. When you pay attention, you can pay attention to something that is very small and closely defined, or you can pay attention to something that is larger, more broadly defined. Right? And once you start to stabilize the movement of your attention, you begin to be aware that the scope of your attention is also subject to fluctuations and variations. And so later on in the process, we'll do practices that are intended to help us gain intentional control over the scope of our attention. That leads to some very interesting places. Once you can control the scope of your attention, keep in mind this comes after you've already learned to sustain the attention, you can focus on something so closely that you become totally absorbed into it, which is, and meditative absorptions are a fabulous practice, time-honored practice. They are, in fact, an insight practice. The other thing that you can do when you have control over the scope of your attention is you can learn to expand your awareness, open it up, so that it's wide open. It doesn't have a focus. And you can train your mind to resist the natural tendency for attention to begin to coalesce around or focus on whatever arises so that your awareness stays open. In other words, you can sustain a wide scope of awareness that you can describe as open awareness. So these are some of the things that come over time as you develop control over both the direction and scope of attention. But the first thing you need to work on is the ability to direct and sustain your attention. Now, the other aspect of what we want to train the mind in is mindful awareness. That's this background awareness that gives whatever you're doing its context. Why you're doing it, where you are, why you're doing it, what else is going on around you. This knowledge that is a part of your experience is derived from what I'm calling awareness. It's the peripheral conscious aspect. And it's very important because it is from that field of awareness that our objects of attention are derived. As a matter of fact, the function of awareness is to basically alert the mind to the presence of something that warrants attention, that warrants that extra high-powered dose of consciousness and mental processing that attention brings, that allows us to analyze, respond, learn, make use of, all the things that we do with our attention. So the function of awareness, and much of this happens at an unconscious level, is to take in this much broader scope of information and process it at a basic level, but thoroughly enough so that our attention is drawn to things that enter that field that are important. And mindful awareness, that's a special kind of awareness that's developed in meditation. It's not part of ordinary experience. Mindful awareness refers to an optimal interaction between consciousness in the form of attention and consciousness in the form of awareness. And it has the effect that if, while you're paying attention to something, you are also aware, you have a much larger range of information to work with. And not only that, what you're paying attention to is given a context. It's given a much larger context. Also, mindful awareness does the same thing that ordinary awareness does in terms of making things available to become objects of attention. But mindful awareness, in particular, because it is more fully conscious, is far more selective, and the things that you pay attention to are far more appropriate. Now, somebody who has not trained themselves in mindful awareness will go through their daily life paying attention to things while being aware of other things. But when something really important comes up, all of their capacity for consciousness will be sucked into paying attention to that one thing. They will lose context. They will lose access to broader information. And also, the kind of information that becomes available to the rest of their mind is very limited, because really what you are conscious of is the window onto reality that all of the rest, the other 90% of your mind, which is unconscious processes, that's its window to the reality that you're in, is with the contents of consciousness. So when you become suddenly focused on something, you lose awareness. And you can't have any mindful awareness then. And so to develop mindful awareness is to develop the skill of not losing awareness even when you're focusing on things. And then making that awareness a more fully conscious part of your ordinary experience. So that's what mindful awareness is. I know everybody can follow the explanation of attention easily, but do you follow the explanation of mindful awareness easily? No problems? Okay. So then let's talk about meditation and how you do it. Well, the first thing that you need to do is to practice directing and sustaining your attention and to gain some control over the movements of attention. So you pick an object, an arbitrarily chosen object that you are going to practice directing your attention towards and fixing your attention on. And of course, there's all kinds of possible objects that you could choose to do this with. But over the course of several thousand years of people doing these practices, a real favorite, because it works really well, is the sensations produced by the breath. Because the breath is always there. You don't have to do anything to generate it. It's not like a mantra, it's not like a visualization, it's something that's there. It's something that happens completely naturally so that you can enter into a relationship with it of being completely the passive observer. You can focus your attention on it, at the same time you can be aware of other things, most especially you can be aware of your own mind while you're focusing your attention on it. And as you go along, that will become a very important part of how you can sustain your focus of attention on it. The breath is also always changing. It is not the same two instants in a row. So that is a special quality that helps you in engaging with the breath and using it to develop attentional stability, is the fact that it's constantly changing. It gives you many different aspects or elements of your meditation object that you can choose to focus on to a greater or lesser degree and to exercise your capacity for consciousness by becoming aware of. But the breath repeats over and over again. And every repetition of the breath is very, very similar to the last, although there are differences. There's a similarity. So that the breath also has all of the advantages that would be associated with a completely unchanging meditation object, in that you can become extremely familiar with it. When you become familiar with it, you can observe it as if from a greater distance, not just zeroing in on it so tightly focused. So the breath as a meditation object is one that is very useful. It's been found to be very useful over many thousands of years for developing meditation. For developing these meditation skills, I should say. So to develop attentional stability, you make yourself completely comfortable, and that's always very important. You must find a way to sit that suits your body and provides as much physical comfort as possible. Because when your body stays still, it's going to become uncomfortable. So you don't need any additional discomfort that comes from your posture being less than ideal. And that's something every individual needs to experiment with themselves. That usually sitting on a cushion with your buttocks a little bit higher than your knees is the best position for most people, but not necessarily for everyone. And then there are a variety of different ways that you can place your legs. Everything from a full lotus to the Burmese position with one leg in front of the other, or a cross-legged. There's many different ways you can position your leg. Likewise, your hands. You can put them in many different places. You can put them on your knee. You can touch your thumbs and your fingers together. You can put one hand over the other. There's all these different possibilities. But you will find a position that is most comfortable for you. And you need to tweak that position. If you find sitting that you always develop a backache or a pain in your knee or your legs fall asleep or something like that, experiment to see if by using a slightly thicker cushion under your buttocks or putting a support under your knee or whatever it is, if you can do something to alleviate that. And so while you're in the process of learning to meditate, you also learn to sit most comfortably, and it's important to do that. Anybody that says this is the way you have to sit, or if you come to meditation with this picture in your mind of what a yogi looks like, you know, from the cover of a magazine or something, and feel like you have to sit that way, you're going to have a very difficult time. Every body is unique. And this is all about training your mind. You can do yoga, you can do other practices with your body that will make it easier for you to sit. But as far as the meditation goes, you want to find a position, a posture to occupy that is going to be the least disturbing to the mental process. Then having sat as comfortably as you can, closing your eyes to minimize visual distractions, then you are going to begin the process of directing and sustaining your attention. What you're going to do is, ultimately, is you're going to focus your attention on the sensations of the breath at a particular location and then see if you can keep your attention there. And the location of choice is somewhere in the vicinity of the opening of the nostrils where the air enters and leaves, the sensations that are produced by that, because it's a very sensitive area. If that, too, will vary. What's important is you find the area where you can perceive those sensations most clearly and most readily. And it may be inside the nostrils, maybe on the upper lip. It will differ, maybe more deeper inside the nose. It doesn't matter. You find the area. Then next, the size of the area could be small, the size of a pencil eraser. Might be, you know, the size of, there might be an area that big. Or also it's possible that there might be a slightly different area where you feel the sensations of the inhale as compared to the exhale. None of that matters. You just find where you can feel the sensations most clearly. And that is what you're going to make as the object to focus your attention on to begin the practice. Now, I always like to suggest that people begin first of all, you close your eyes, you know, and you can do this right now. Close your eyes. And just be aware of everything that's happening around you. Ambient sounds, sensations in your body, sensations of air on your skin, clothing. You feel the movement of your breath, perhaps your heartbeat, sensations of warmth, coolness, pressure. Allow your attention to initially just freely go where it will and take whatever objects it will in the external environment or in your body. What you mainly don't want to do is have your attention fixed on some thought process. The most important thing is that you're staying here completely in the present, allowing your attention to engage with whatever sensations, the sense of hearing, touch, etc., that it happens to land on. And the next step is you gradually curtail the freedom of movement of attention. So the next step is you preferentially attend to sensations in your body, allowing sounds to be present in the background, but letting the attention move freely, but just from one sensation to another in the body. Now, after a certain period of doing that, what will become quite obvious is that the most prominent sensations in your body, or amongst the most prominent at least, you might have a sore ankle or something like that, but amongst the most prominent sensations in your body are going to be the sensations produced by the movement as you breathe in and out. And so, the next stage, you can just allow yourself to be aware in the background of sounds, in the background any other sensations in the body, but preferentially attend only to sensations that are related to the breath. And then, of course, the final step in the process of what we've just done, you would observe the sensations in your abdomen, the sensations in your chest, and the sensations in the vicinity of your nose. And then the final step is to just bring your attention to a focus on the sensations of the breath at the nose. And meditation after that is simple. You just keep your attention on the sensations of the breath in your nose. Oh, well, it will go away, yes. Other things will intrude. But you just keep it back, keep bringing it back to the sensations of the breath at the nose. Except that if you have the idea that, well, I'm supposed to be able to keep my attention on the breath, and it doesn't happen, you're going to start feeling irritated and annoyed, things like that. Why does this keep happening? So, we need to analyze the process. You focus your attention on the sensations of the breath at the nose. You're fine for a little while, one breath, maybe two or three, but then the next thing you know, a period of time has elapsed during which you know you were thinking about a lot of other things. And that you had forgotten the breath sometime earlier. And that's what keeps happening over and over again. So if we analyze that, we'll say, okay, you don't have any deliberate conscious control over whatever caused you to lose awareness of the breath. And you don't have any deliberate conscious control over whatever it was that made you remember once again that you were intending to have your attention on the breath. So, you can't, to beat yourself up and try to make it not happen, you don't have conscious control over it. So you can't make the one thing not happen or force the other thing to happen. You have to use subtler means. So, now, you train the mind the same way you train dogs and children and all kinds of other things, with positive and negative reinforcement. And if you forgot the breath at point A in time, and then 2 minutes later at point B, you realize that, saying, oh darn, and beating yourself up for forgetting the breath, is the negative reinforcement is separated from the event that you would like to change by 2 minutes. It's not going to work. The event that just happened, though, is that you realized that you had lost the attention on the breath. And in that instant, if you think about it, that was you became more fully aware and fully awake than you were when you were lost in the thought. So, this is actually a more desirable state of your mind. You would like your mind to be in this more fully present, more awake state all the time. So that being the case, instead of beating yourself up for having forgotten the meditation object, revel in and enjoy the experience of having come back to a state of awareness that will positively reinforce the unconscious process that put together the fact that you're not meditating with the fact that you intended to meditate and made you conscious of that. And so that is the first step that you're going to do, is to not become annoyed at your mind doing what it's meant to do, but to take satisfaction in your mind doing what it wants to do, what you want it to do, what you would prefer that it does. So you positively reinforce the process of remembering. And if we go into this a little deeper, then we actually see first of all, if you keep doing that, you will have this experience of awakening that terminates a period of mind wandering more and more quickly. And then you'll come to realize that the mind only wanders after you've forgotten what you were doing. So forgetting precedes mind wandering. But first you have to work backwards. So first you have to work on shortening up the period of time of mind wandering. Then you can start working on the forgetting. And don't have time to continue with this, but you would work on the forgetting, and then you would realize what causes the forgetting. Well, you're paying attention to one thing, something else comes along as a distraction, and you start paying attention to this other thing, even while you haven't forgotten the meditation object. But the more time you spend paying attention to this other thing that's come up, this other thought, we call that a gross distraction. That's what leads to the forgetting, and then the forgetting leads to the mind wandering. And so you, in order to stabilize your attention, you work your way backward through mind wandering, forgetting, gross distractions, and ultimately through the subtle distractions that become gross distractions, eliminating those so that you can stabilize attention. So, I don't think we have any new meditators in here, right? Do we have any new meditators in the room? Okay, well, so we were having a make-believe class for new meditators. And the audience is perfect. It's all experienced meditators. So now you can tell me, when I do this next time with a group of beginning meditators, what I should do different to make it more effective. In what sense what I told you might have been confusing or unnecessary or whatever. I would appreciate your feedback.
It was perfect.
Was it?
It was really, yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I got lost a little bit.
You got lost a little bit?
My attention, when you were talking about attention, my attention went other places.
Right. Yeah.
So, my attention has been other places, like, not very focused lately. Mm-hmm. So, but if you're having new meditators in, mm-hmm. they're not.
I think maybe leave the theoretical part until later. My thing would be just start out with describing the basic method and then maybe just guiding people through.
The guided thing, I think. Because then it's more practical.
The guided thing is
doing it as opposed to talking.
Thinking back to my very first meditation experience, I needed about 30 seconds of this is what we do. Mm-hmm. But I also had questions right up front. Mm-hmm. So it might be that you could do some of what you did and then ask for questions so that somebody who had a question coming into it, you get that out of the way.
That's a good idea. And you mean a little bit of an introduction to the theoretical part of it. Yeah. I think, and really when I think about it, as I was talking, I was noticing that, well, what is it that's really important about that is that, well, some of the most important things are the things that people would have questions about or that people would have misunderstandings about. It's very often when people begin to meditate, especially they have the word concentration in their mind, they think they're supposed to block out everything else and they're supposed to stop thoughts, which is not part of it. That's probably far more important than the things that I was talking about today. It's just those simple things. which would be related to questions that people would ask. How do I do this, or what do I do about that? Yes?
When I was a beginning meditator, more than one of my teachers across the experience of being new would talk about boredom and say, don't worry about that. It's okay. Beginners get bored. It's part of the process. I haven't been bored in so long. I've been a lot of things. A lot of other things.
But not bored.
One thing doesn't come up. What can you say about boredom?
Yeah. Well, boredom is, that is something that comes out, boredom and restlessness. But I find usually it doesn't come up the very first time or two that a person meditates. It's new enough, you know, that it isn't too much boredom. But it comes up fairly soon after that, so it does need to be addressed.
Yeah, and I can't remember it.
Yeah.
I can't.
No, it's more likely, I think, what you'll remember is frustration or disappointment because you have expectations of how you think it'll go and then you're not meeting those expectations.